Dr. Hoffman here. This Intelligent Medicine podcast is brought to you by Super Beets. Beets are a nutritional gold mine, full of antioxidants and nutrients, but they're a mess to prepare. So just mix Super Beets with 4 ounces of water and boost circulation, relax arteries, and maintain healthy blood pressure. Get the Dr. Hoffman special offer at intelligentbeets.com. That's intelligentbeets.com. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and once again, it's time for our weekly Q&A with Layla, which is a session where we read back your questions and we endeavor to answer them. You can send questions to a radio program at AOL.com. That's one word, radio program at AOL.com. And please make your questions succinct and of relative general interest. We can't problem solve for everyone. But we got quite a lot of interesting questions this week, right, Layla?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, we do.
Indeed. So for those of you unfamiliar with Q&A with Layla, they're divided into two parts, part one followed by part two. And we do them on a weekly basis. Layla Mudin is the nutritionist at the Hoffman Center. I work together with her on a daily basis solving patients' problems. She's a registered dietitian with an advanced master's degree in the field of nutrition. How am I doing, Layla? Correct so far?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't want to misrepresent things here. Add additional initials to your credentials. So before we get to our questions, I think one of the more interesting stories this week was the story of a 34-year-old guy who undertook a rather bizarre experiment. He deliberately ingested 10 Cokes per day, 10, what was it, 8-ounce servings of Coke per day for a series of 30 days, 30 consecutive days. Oh. And he recorded that on videos, which are all over the internet. You can check it out at, not at drhoffman.com, but I put it up on Facebook, and it's all over the internet. The transformation that occurred in this guy is just fantastic. In just 1 month, he gained 24 pounds. His blood pressure shot up to dangerous levels. It had been normal. By the way, this guy was a very healthy, buff-looking guy before. And he complained of being depressed. And paradoxically, he said his sugar cravings went through the roof. The more sugar he had, not paradoxically to us, because we know this phenomenon. But, how is it that when you're consuming that much sugar, you think, well, okay, I'm satisfied. I'm putting in tons and tons of sugar. That ended up being, in addition to his daily meals, 5,000 calories per day.
Wow.
5,000 calories. Not that 10 Cokes is 5,000 calories. I think it's less. But when you add it to his daily food intake, his total intake was 5,000. So disastrous effects.
I wonder what his liver looks like.
Oh, who knows? Yeah. I mean, that's precisely what causes the problem of fatty liver. And it kind of reminds us of that movie. What was it? With what's that guy's name? I always forget his name. The guy who ate McDonald's.
That's right. Fast Food Nation.
Yeah.
Spurlock.
Morgan Spurlock. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
I forgot to take my ginkgo biloba.
He had elevated liver enzymes after 30 days of supersize me.
And I actually know the doctor who he consulted with, who followed him. She is a young physician in New York, and she agreed to monitor and make sure that he wasn't going to keel over. And she was quite alarmed at the results. He developed elevated liver enzymes, fatty liver. That's inevitable when you take in too much high fructose corn syrup. So, if anybody obviously there are some people who are consuming at levels like that. They're few and far between. But it's a cautionary tale. You're consuming, a third of that amount, 3-4 Cokes a day. That ain't good either. You just may get part of the way towards what happened with him.
Mm-hmm. So you don't want to drink all those calories. And even a diet soda can do the same kind of damage, and especially aspartame on the brain. It's a neurotoxin. But, terrible stuff.
The new thing on the diet sodas is that the chemicals in the diet sodas may do a number on the bacteria in your intestinal tract. They may damage your flora or your microbiome and thereby inadvertently create the conditions for diabetes, even though they don't deliver calories. So they change your metabolism by altering your flora. I mean, it's putting harmful chemicals into your gut.
Yeah, so it's not just antibiotics that are messing with our microbiome. It's everything, that we eat and drink. So.
Toxic ingredients, potentially. So it's even thought that the way that chocolate works to help the metabolism is that the beneficial phenols in chocolate, in cocoa, actually don't act so much chemically in the bloodstream. They do to some extent, but they alter the intestinal flora in a positive way. And if that's if that's the case, I probably have the healthiest intestinal flora of anyone on the planet, because I consume a lot of dark chocolate. I'm not ashamed to say that, but. And I pay it forward in the gym, and I burn it off. But
Good for you.
Yeah.
Oh.
I just consumed. I got for my birthday, which was in October. So now we're after about 6 weeks, I consumed a full kilo bar of dark chocolate that somebody gave me for my birthday. So it was it's like a brick of chocolate, just heavy, 2.2 pounds, and I just gnawed my way through that. And I just finished it. So, hopefully, not at one sitting. That probably wouldn't be good.
Oh, good. Nibble some, go to the gym. Nibble some more, go to the gym. That works.
You would go out with a bang if you had it all in one sitting, though. It would be, a splendid way to go. It's like... all right. You've got some questions for us.
Yes, I do. Let's see here. This question is from Azim. Hi, Dr. Hoffman. I like your article.
By the way, isn't Azim from some exotic place?
Don't know.
Okay.
Don't have all that info on the email.
No, because we got it. Okay, go ahead with the question, because we got a question from a guy in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
Was that him?
Yeah, that's different from this. That's
okay,
different from
great.
This.
Okay, so this is a local Azim. All right.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So Azim says, I liked your article on anxiety. Please tell me something. For how long do we have to take the natural supplements to cure anxiety? I'm taking these for the past 3 months. They're working very well. When is it time to taper or stop?
Okay,
thank you and best regards.
Great question, and I'm really happy that he's having good results. It's very exciting because I've written several articles on the subject of anxiety. We did a podcast this year, a clinical focus podcast on the subject of anxiety, and I hope that that's helping a lot of people. I'm very gratified to hear that people, just merely by listening, they're trying some things and it's helping their anxiety, which, by the way, is probably the most pervasive chronic problem that we see. We see a lot of people overweight. We see people with diabetes, but such a high percentage of people suffer from debilitating anxiety. So it's nice to help them with nutritional tips that actually help, because the medications, they can slow the anxiety down, but they slow you down, and ultimately they increase your risk of dying. The studies show that they're potentially harmful.
Yeah.
So so what's your take on that question? I mean, how would you answer that?
Yeah, first of all, I'd want to know the source of the anxiety. And is the anxiety a symptom of something else? Maybe he has unstable blood sugar. I mean, just speaking physiologically, what may be happening to cause his anxiety, it could be that. If it's other things, psychological trauma, anything, life stress, that kind of thing, if that's what's causing anxiety, I really think talk therapy is a good idea.
Sure. Or cognitive behavioral therapy. Yeah.
Something to be able to relieve your anxiety, or to be able to get it so that you could make it small enough to wrap your arms around it and dissolve it somehow or something. But speaking physiologically, because this is what I do from a nutrition standpoint, I would question what's going on with your blood sugar.
Right.
When do you feel anxious?
But his question is, he's better. He says he's better. No, his question is how long, it's not like, what do I need to do to get rid of my anxiety? He is actually better. So what he's saying is, how long do I need to continue it? When am I cured? And the answer I would give is, I can't be there wagging a finger saying, make sure you follow your perfect hypoglycemic diet, take your supplements every day. He has to explore, and this is what we say to our patients, we don't want to create a dependency. You have to conduct your own science fair project. How stringent does your diet have to be to maintain the benefits? And whatever the condition is, say it's, you want to maintain your weight, or you want to maintain good energy, you want to get rid of fibromyalgia, bodily aches and pains. How stringent does the diet need to be? There are two tough things about being us at the Hoffman Center. One is getting the patients well, right? That's a crapshoot sometimes, very challenging. But then the second part is, if we are so fortunate as to help the patient to become well, The second tough part is, okay, so how long do they need to adhere to the program? How stringently do they need to adhere to the program? Because, you know, lots and lots of supplements can be expensive, time-consuming, and mm-hmm. diet can be somewhat constricting. So, and that's a tougher question, because I don't know for each given individual if they have to adhere to an ultra-strict program to maintain right. the benefits. Sometimes people get into a recovery mode and they tolerate more, shall we say, deviations from the mm-hmm. the ideal plan. Mm-hmm. And, you know, anxiety is one of those things is, you know, the worse it is, the worse it is. And the better it is, exactly. the better it is. And you may actually simmer down. And in the future, you may say, gee, that was really weird. Back in, you know, 2014, I suffered from terrible anxiety, but I got past it. And, you know, that was another phase of my life. And now I'm, mm-hmm. you know, I've learned some tools to help me cope with anxiety. End of story. It's just a, you know, something that is, you know, no longer front and center.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there are lots of things that can cause anxiety.
Sure.
If this person is online at the local coffee bar, you know, three times a day, I'd say, hey, maybe you want to ease up on the caffeine. Often it's something as simple as that. But again, it's often more complex than that.
Yeah.
You and I see.
So just to review, I mean, the main supplements helpful for anxiety, we like magnesium, we like
yes.
Omega-3 fish oil, we like L-theanine, that's mm-hmm. really important. And to some extent, there's even when patients suffer from depression, they may benefit from amino acids, tryptophan, 5-HT, that's 5-hydroxytryptophan. They may benefit from anti-inflammatory things. Curcumin has actually been shown to be helpful for depression, which I know that
yeah.
he's not describing, but actually anxiety is a manifestation of depression sometimes, and curcumin can help. Yeah.
They often go hand in hand.
The B vitamins, sometimes for certain yeah. people, especially patients who have the SNPs for MTHFR, mm-hmm. polymorphism, that's a new thing we can test for genetically. When that's awry, sometimes the methylated B vitamins hit the sweet spot, B12,
right.
folate,
right.
and
P5P.
Pyridoxal 5 phosphate in and of itself. We used to, even
yes.
before we knew about MTHFR genetic mutations, we knew that some patients taking higher doses of activated B6, P5P, that was really a chill pill for some patients with anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a variety of ways to go. And I love to talk about this because, I mean, here we have proof positive. We have a you know, somebody who we haven't even talked to, except through our broadcasts or our writings, who's had a sea change in their attitude. So that's really, really gratifying.
Yeah. Oh, best of luck to Azeem. All right. Now, Dr. Hoppen, this next question.
I was going to say because if Azeem is in Afghanistan, he has reason to have anxiety. You know, I'm saying like, you know, when things are like blowing up and the Taliban is threatening to, you know, it's like you want to be totally
yeah.
calm. It's like it's not realistic. But anyway, so our next
this is
a person from Afghanistan and not
yeah.
a serviceman, because we do have sometimes servicemen. Mm-hmm. God bless them, because they want to stay fit. You know, under very daunting conditions, and they like to take supplements. And sometimes,
yeah.
they, you know, we love it when they can obtain a care package from the States with the right kind of supplements, because we know that the foods that they're eating are really substandard and getting,
that's
you know,
true.
There's no virtually no fish, so you got to get omega-3 fatty acids to help you with mm-hmm. the stress. But anyway, this is from a local with a local Afghani name, right?
Right, right. Well, this gentleman is from Afghanistan. His name is Munir.
Okay, sounds
Dr.
plausible.
Hi, Dr. Hoppen. I hope you're doing well. I have kidney stones. Please guide me. What shall I do?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of diet should I follow? Thank you very much for any advice.
Well, yeah. I would point out to Munir that earlier this year, we did a comprehensive clinical focus podcast on the subject of kidney stones. So he should listen to that. And in it, you know, we talk about certain things to do dietarily. We talk about the fact that there are certain supplements that are beneficial, magnesium citrate in particular. Also, we like to use vitamin B6, regular vitamin B6, which hopefully these things are obtainable there. We also like to use lemon juice. You know, just take, but not, you know, lemonade, because that's full of sugar. Sugar actually may promote stones.
Lemon juice and some water.
Yeah, just squeeze 6 lemons into a pitcher of water and keep that in the refrigerator. And it's kind of tart. Maybe you can you know, sweeten it with a little bit of, you know.
Lemon water tastes just fine.
Yeah. But, you know, if you want to sweeten it, one of the things that I'm into these days is there's a product by Clear, X-L-E-A-R. That company makes a erythritol xylitol natural sweetener, which it's not a chemical sweetener. These are natural sugars, but they're non-caloric sugars.
Sugar alcohols, yes.
Yeah.
And they occur naturally. Sure.
They give you a little bit of sweetness, and you have to avoid taking too much because sugar alcohols can have a laxative effect. For some people, that's desirable. But you can mm-hmm. you could throw that into the lemonade. Okay, so what else? From the standpoint of diet, low oxalate diet for some patients?
Low oxalate diet, absolutely. So avoiding certain foods that are higher in oxalate than not.
By the way, 85% of stones are oxalate stones, so we're assuming that these are oxalate stones.
Mm-hmm. And not uric acid stones.
If they're uric acid stones, it's a slightly different protocol.
Yeah.
You want to do we want to use the gout protocol to lower uric acid.
And you know, I also want to point out to Munir that people mostly get kidney stones, or the prevalence of kidney stones increases in the summer months.
Yep.
People are more dehydrated.
Yes.
They're not taking in enough water to flush the kidneys. Be cognizant of that. Make sure that you're drinking enough water.
And something they drink over there,
tons of.
They drink a lot of tea over there, and that's high in oxalic acid.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it turns out that actually there may be some properties of beer that have sort of anti-stone effects, but don't drink too much because you'll become dehydrated. So that's not a good. You know.
He's in Afghanistan. You should drink.
That's right. He's a Muslim, so they behead people for that. Some parts of Afghanistan. It's not considered religiously correct. So we're not going to go there. Yeah, so those, I mean, obviously, the extremes of temperature there, dry climate, there could be some problems that you know, make that more likely to happen somewhere over there.
That's true, yeah.
So we hope you're listening, Munir, and please reference at drhoffman.com. Go back a few weeks. You can use this handy search feature. There's a search box. You can put in kidney stones or the word nephrolithiasis, which is a fancy word for kidney stones. And you'll probably be able to find that podcast. We did it in summer or early fall. I think it was summer on the subject of kidney stones, natural prevention of kidney stones.
All right.
But definitely best something that's very, very, there's really terrific nutritional strategies for preventing subsequent kidney stones.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We have another question from Jan.
Mm-hmm.
My 70-year-old husband is taking rhodiola for increased energy.
Good.
However, after a bit of research, he discovered that it has some of the same properties of an MAO inhibitor. Now, are there any negative effects to using this product? Like, do I have to avoid tyramine-containing foods, fermented foods, cheeses, wines?
Right. So let's explain what this is about. There is a category of antidepressants that are actually very old and seldom used. Although there's some newer Parkinson's drugs that are also MAO inhibitors that have the property that when you eat certain foods, they may cause a rise in blood pressure, dangerously so. And this is caused by sort of a storm of activity in the nervous system that is caused by inhibition of something called monoamine oxidase. And when you inhibit monoamine oxidase, that actually helps enhance your mood. But when you add tyramine, it's like rocket fuel for that. So it goes beyond enhancing your mood. It actually sends you into sort of a frenzy and elevated blood pressure, and that can be dangerous. So the foods that cause that are tyramine-containing foods, and you, the dietitian, can point those out. What are those?
Yeah, there are many fermented foods, cheeses, wine, even some chocolate. Sorry.
Right. But this is very rare. And this occurs only with certain drugs, most of which have been abandoned. And drugs like Nardil. Now, who out there is on? That's an old-fashioned drug. Very few people are on it. Mostly, these drugs have been abandoned, partially because we have better drugs, partially because there's unacceptable dietary restrictions. So, it's interesting that the newer drugs that are used for Parkinson's disease. There are some precautions about massive consumption of aged meats or things like that. Processed meats. But they mostly say you don't have to worry too much about diet, even with the drug. So if a herb like rhodiola has mild MAO inhibition effects, very mild, much milder
rhodiola
than any drug
does,
around,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Rhodiola,
mm-hmm.
It's very unlikely that there will be any contraindication dietarily.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I think he can go ahead and eat what he wants and, you know, perhaps monitor his blood pressure, be cognizant of any changes in case he's particularly sensitive to that effect. But that's actually one of the ways in which rhodiola may work to enhance mood. It has an antidepressant effect, but actually it works through a variety of mechanisms, not just MAO inhibition to improve mood.
Okay. Janet is also asking, would it be okay for somebody with AFib to take rhodiola?
There should be no problem. And here's what you got to watch out for in AFib. You have to watch out for accelerants, things that are like have a caffeine-like effect or a speedy effect. So you may not want to take Ephedra, or you may not want to take high doses of caffeine. But you also have to watch out for blood thinning or inhibition of blood thinning, because many patients with AFib, the vast majority of them, should be on anticoagulants to thin the blood. So you don't want to take things that have a pronounced blood thinning effect. Perhaps you have to be a little careful about high doses of garlic or ginkgo, because they have blood thinning or platelet inhibiting effects that may be additive to the medications that are taken for the AFib. But rhodiola is not a problem there.
Yeah. Okay. Jan, best of luck. All right. Your husband can continue taking rhodiola.
Yep. Do you have time for a short one?
Well, this could be a short one.
Okay.
Yes. Let's see here. Dr. Hoffman, how do I choose a legitimate integrative medicine doctor?
Oh, that could be an hour.
Yeah. Maybe it's not such a short answer. Come see Dr. Hoffman.
Right.
He's legit.
That's the end-all and be-all of legitimacy is just me, and that's, you know, that's where it starts and that's where it ends. No, listen, you know, that's such an important question that, you know, we're nearing the end of this segment, which is part one of today's Q&A with Layla. Let's devote some time and attention to the question that you just asked, which is how do you find the right, Dr. Wright for you when it comes to complementary and alternative medicine? How about that? Because I think there's a lot to be said on that subject.
Okay.
So we'll take that up in part two. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mudin. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, and we invite your questions. Send them to radioprogram@AOL.com. We'll be right back. This is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.